You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Who can decide when and how to end affirmative action? That question has generated a heated constitutional argument on the U.S. Supreme Court, which today issued a 6-2 decision upholding the right of the state of Michigan to end a policy of racial preferences in that state's university admissions policies. The majority on the Supreme Court said that the federal government had no power to intervene in this state exercise of democracy. Michigan voters passed a ballot measure in 2006 by a majority of 58% to end affirmative action. That ballot measure was in response to the 2003 Supreme Court decision that permitted race as a factor in admissions at the University of Michigan Law School. Today's decision says voters can enact law to clarify their admissions policy, while the minority dissent on the court angrily denounced this decision as permitting majority rule to make minorities more vulnerable, and as an invitation to enact more ballot measures banning affirmative action around the nation. For more on the ramifications of this ruling, we turn to Kareem Creighton. He's associate professor of law at the University of North Carolina Law School. Kareem, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So this is a 6-2 decision because Elena Kagan, Justice Kagan, recused herself. What's that all about?
Well, generally, the members of the court, when they have potential conflicts of interest, are invited, if they choose, to recuse themselves. And in this case, there's some belief that because Justice Kagan was at the time working within the White House in her appointed position as White House counsel, that she felt that it was perhaps too close to a connection. And in fact, they never actually have to explain their reasons. All we know is that she decided in this case she should recuse.
How much of a technicality is this in the sense that really what the majority wanted to stress was that this isn't about affirmative action, it's about who can decide certain things at the ballot box?
Well, that is how the opinion seems to read, but I think it carries really great implications, both for what it says the public can do in developing ballot measures that might do new changes to any number of policies. But I think from the perspective of minority groups and civil rights groups, I think there are real concerns about whether or not it is possible to utilize the political process in certain ways to protect and enhance rights that, you know, make sure that minorities have access versus those where the thrust of the ballot measure is intended to cut back on those opportunities. This is, as the court said, an ongoing conversation at the ballot box.
I guess I'm a little confused, though, because wasn't the decision on gay marriage about a proposition in California which voters passed, and the Supreme Court seemed to believe that it was okay to intervene in that ballot measure? Don't all ballot measures have to pass a constitutionality test?
Well, that's actually the more confusing part of the opinion. I think the people who advocated for the court's intervention here said these cases are pretty much the same. And what the court seems to tell us is they distinguish cases where the thrust of the ballot measure targets a particular group or a particular issue. And here, as the opinion seems to read, the thrust of the ballot measure is an entrenchment of an equality norm that reflects the 14th Amendment, or at least a particular understanding of it. And so because of that, the court says there's no targeting in the way that would threaten the kinds of political process principles that they seem troubled by in the California case, and also going as far back as Romer v. Evans, a case involving same-sex or the rights of gays and lesbians to utilize the political process back in the late 90s.
So this is an actual invitation on some level to enact ballot measures around the country. Who's likely to be empowered by this? And are there any indications from this decision of what wouldn't be permitted if it's passed at the ballot measure in a more extreme case?
Right. So I think correct. It is indeed an invitation, I think, that many people in the community who feel that affirmative action isn't an appropriate policy for the state to adopt, to utilize the ballot measure process around the country to try to roll that back. There are some limits that the court seems to be concerned about. And of course, we always look at Justice Kennedy because in most cases he tends to be the fifth vote. And it seems as though the limitations that might exist, we don't know until we see the case, are those where the group is specifically targeted throughout other groups in the political system. That is, let's say racial minorities as compared to other groups are cut off from exercising certain political rights, or perhaps there are specific areas where public says we no longer want to have a political conversation at the ballot box and we'll take this off the table. Those seem to be the kinds of cases that the court might be more concerned about, but we just don't know how far reaching that distinction is that the court seems to be making here from the cases where it has chosen to intervene in the past.
Finally, is this only about admissions policies, or are admissions policies a template to all sorts of employment-based and other kinds of preferences and criteria for hiring people, et cetera?
We don't quite know the clear answer to that just yet. It seems as though the court, in its language, is limiting its analysis to the issue at hand, which is college admissions. And there are strands in certain opinions that tell us that because there's no federally protected constitutional right in this case, the right to pursue race for the purposes of diversity, there might be a different analysis that the court may apply if there is actually a federally protected constitutional right that commands the state to do something that perhaps through ballot measures people are no longer able to do. But we just don't know yet.
So short of a constitutional amendment which says that states must do something to ensure diversity, the 14th Amendment really doesn't cover this.
Well, that actually, again, is one of these untested questions. The Constitution, according to the court, seems to permit that. That was the point of the Fisher decision. What we don't know is whether a state that says, as you just described, we are going to mandate that the state engage in that kind of behavior would be immune from constitutional challenge. And I think, again, on its surface, it should be consistent. But I think the question would be whether opponents of affirmative action would say, well, there are certain cases that push the state into circumstances where they take race into account that perhaps the plaintiffs or the claimants in this hypothetical claim would say it shouldn't do. So we just don't know until we see that case in front of this court.
Kareem Creighton is Associate Professor of Law at the University of North Carolina Law School, commenting on today's U.S. Supreme Court decision on affirmative action, upholding a ballot measure that banned affirmative action in that state's university admissions policies by a vote of 6-2. Professor, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Later in the hour, the path toward tolerance and away from ignorance, where progress is measured in steps of awkwardness.
This is Barbara Fishlowitz-Leong in Honolulu, Hawaii. As a person with albinism, I've heard ridiculous questions all my life, like, did someone pour bleach on you? Are you always that white? Why don't you tan?
Maybe it doesn't feel like progress all the time. Have you asked or been asked an insensitive question? Tell us at 8778-MY-TAKE or tweet us your insensitive moments at the takeaway, hashtag, I can't believe you just said that.